I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not real.
Limited Capacity is a collection of six darkly amusing stories about the mysterious ways we interact with the internet and with each other.
There's something going on with him. It's like an act. I don't trust him.
What?
You're staring at me like I should say something, but I don't really know what to do here.
That's the whole name of the game. Don't talk about how the town isn't real. Do you understand?
Limited Capacity. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hey, what's up, beautiful folks? Jeremy here from Sick Boy Podcast and got some show dates. A big one. It's our last show in Toronto for the year 2018. It is coming up November 4th. There are still tickets available to that show. It's going to be at the Entertainment One headquarters in downtown Toronto. So if you want tickets or info on that show, head on over to sickboypodcast.com/shows. And a couple, I mean, this is kind of last minute, but we've got a show tomorrow, Tuesday, October 30th, in Vancouver. There's still a couple tickets left. So if you're in the city, we're currently here, go grab your tickets. It's going to be a beautiful show. And then a couple days later, November 1st, I think there are tickets left. I'm not quite sure. Calgary in Sate, at Sate, the college. You can head on over to sickboypodcast.com/shows for all the info on those tickets. And actually, you know what? There's another little thing happening in Toronto. November 5th, the podcast playlist Hot Docs Podcast Festival. And if you want info on that, you can also head on over to sickboypodcast.com/shows. We'd love to see all of you out to these live shows. They're a hell of fun. And it's nice to, you know, meet the listeners, put a face to the ears that we're being shot into on a weekly basis. So go get your tickets. Come hang out with Brian, Taylor, and myself. And let's have a laugh and a consensual hug or a high five or a handshake. Hope you enjoy this week's episode. Welcome to Sick Boy, a podcast where we talk about what it's like to be sick. This week's guest is Ken. He had endocarditis. Let's talk about it. Okay, I feel like this recording is going to feel like we're in the desert because there's no water in sight. I've got this like phlegm thing going on in my throat. You know how, Tay, you always clear your throat like 1,000 times a day while we record?
We had this conversation the other day and I told you I think that that's psychosomatic.
You think it's psychosomatic in you.
Yeah, yeah.
In me, there's like legitimate something going on where it's like phlegm is just like coming up into my throat. But like it's not in my throat until I force it up into it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Does it change your voice?
Yeah.
Like where your voice gets really like thin?
Oh, no. But you'll hear like a grovel. Like, you know what? I'll try not to do it and just leave it.
Let it happen.
And just let it happen. And it sounds fucking awful.
Because that's what happens to me when I do that. I teach yoga. Can you turn that did you just turn that monitor? Now I'm like, hey, Ken, now you're Wilson from Home Improvement. I can see you from the nose up.
If you thought about anybody else other than yourself for once in your life, you'd realize that I probably did it to make it so that I could see everybody, but you don't think about anybody else, so.
No one can see this, but we are not home. We are in Vancouver. This is the second time we've been in Vancouver this year, and this is the first recording that we're doing since we've been in town. We've got a whole bunch of recordings coming up and a couple of live shows over the next week, so we're super stoked to be here. But I'm really excited to be sitting here with our first guest, Ken.
Thank you, sir.
How are you?
I'm well now.
Yeah. You're here. You're live. It's 2018.
Yep.
Kind of a funny build, lead up to this. We were on, you know, we're recording a big shout out to Chorus Entertainment. They're allowing us to use one of their recording spaces, which is, you know, like 300% more legit than the recording studios that we usually use.
I'd say like 3,000%.
Yeah. It's quite a bit more percentage higher. And so, we're way up in this high rise in Vancouver and we're on the sidewalk outside and this guy just walks out into traffic and then he quickly realizes, oh, I shouldn't have walked into traffic. Turns around, you know, I was on the phone, says something, and we're all like, ha ha ha, I almost followed you out into traffic there. And then we get on the elevator in the building, and then separate elevators. We end up getting off at the same time on the same floor, going, oh, hey, you're the guy that
almost got creamed by that
guy. You're the guy from the sidewalk. And then the girl at reception, we're like, hey, we're Sick Boy Podcast. And then the guy beside us, that was the guy in the crosswalk, goes, I'm here to see Sick Boy Podcast.
And then we realized it all made sense because he's blind. Ken's blind. Yes. So that's why he almost walked into traffic.
I shouldn't have made that premature ejaculation joke.
No, but Ken's not blind. But Ken, why don't you fill us in on what it is we will be talking about today? What you've been...
3 years ago this month, I got a cough. And it lasted 3 months, and one of my coworkers found me on the floor, passed out of my office.
Just from coughing so hard?
Well, guys don't go to the doctor to get checked out, so right. I was being a tough guy and just working through what I thought was a cold, and it just kept on getting worse and worse and worse, and I passed out on the floor of my office, still didn't do anything, and she found me in my car one day with the car running, and I was slumped over the steering wheel for about an hour, just passed right out.
Jesus,
holy shit. This is like, we ramped right up into it.
Yeah. Well, the one thing I want to like take it back, so I guess you're a little bit older than the three of us.
A little bit.
You're in your 50s?
I'm in my 50s, 54.
54, okay. And it's funny because like, you're like definitely your generation, there was and I guess like still is this mentality of like, suck it up, don't like men aren't weak, like do not go to the doctor, everything will be fine, I'll just like muscle through this.
Still prevalent.
That's right.
Even in our generation,
still prevalent.
I'm subconsciously like that a little bit.
Yeah. But I think we are trying to, like one of the things we do with this show is we're trying to like, you know, dispel that and like change that.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's definitely like rooted and ingrained. I see it in my dad. I see it in my dad's dad.
Yeah.
You know? But when you even knowing that, when you hear someone say something as fucking crazy as, yeah, I passed out of my office and then someone woke me up and then later I went to my, sitting in the car and
went for a couple beers afterwards.
Slumped over the car, the steering wheel of the car. It like, that is so bonkers to me.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like, what's the straw that breaks the camel's back there? Like,
that was everybody else being concerned for me and forcing me to go to emergency.
Sure. Sure,
and
course.
you're like I'm not going because I'm weak. I'm going because you guys all want me to go. Right,
6 hour wait in emergency. Who wants to do that?
That's the daunting thing.
Amen to that. That's one of those things why I still to this day, when someone's begging me to go to the hospital, I'm like, ugh, I just don't want to go wait.
Well, that's the Canadian. You know, that's the drawback. You know, we dive into. We dive into like the pros and cons of healthcare systems and stuff like that, and you know, we've got a big pro in that it's, you know, more or less taken care of by the government, by us paying taxes. But the drawback is it's a huge wait wherever you go.
6 hours isn't too bad though, considering.
I think
6 hours is probably pretty average.
Pretty average.
I kind of think that wait times are perceived wait times. It's a perception of people that they're really high because they're not always high. It depends on when you go and it depends on the situation. And there's long wait times for like specific things. Like if you want to get like an MRI done or like a CAT scan and it's not like a medical emergency, then you can be on like really, really, really long wait lists for things like that.
Unless you're in the hospital. If you're in there, you get in right away.
Oh,
right.
They wheel you through. Yep. They've got the porters.
The point that I just wanted to make was like, No, United States, we do not want your system.
No, not at all.
No, I don't think so.
And I think the point you were also trying to make, Brian, is that when you have an emergency, wait until about Wednesday around 1 p.m. It's the off hours. It's really not peak times. No one goes to the ER around Wednesday, 2 o'clock.
Friday night and Saturday night?
Stay the fuck
home.
Dude,
I go, if I need to go to the emergency room, middle of the week at the QE2, like at 2 a.m.,
I was told Mondays are the worst. Most people will suffer through the weekend.
Because it's a weekend.
Off the beers to play the sports.
Right.
And then Monday, everybody goes.
That's so funny because I was kind of joking, but also I'm sure there are peak times.
And there are, absolutely. And the irony of it being an emergency room.
It's like, yeah, right.
It's an emergency room where you will put it off to go there, and when you get there, you have to wait.
Okay, so let's take it back. So you had this cough. And when you say cough, do you mean like you thought it was just like a common cold?
It was just a cold. It was just, that's what I thought it was. And I thought maybe it might move to the flu, and it was just coughing. Nothing was coming up. I wasn't doing anything. But then I couldn't eat, and then I couldn't keep anything down. So when I finally went in, they, they basically said it was my heart. And then that immediately went wrong, and then it turned in I was on a waiting list for a kidney forever.
Whoa.
Oh, shit.
Jeez, whoa, totally. Yeah. Whoa. That was 3 years ago. I was on dialysis for a year and 6 months.
And whoa.
Can you go through dialysis? I've heard dialysis 1,000 times, and I know kind of the loose definition of what it is, but what exactly is going on?
What it is you sit in a chair or a hospital bed for 4 hours while they filter your blood. You have two tubes in you, and it depends. I mean, I've had one in my chest. I've had one in my neck. And they take your blood out. They filter it through a little filtering system that gets all the bad stuff out. Gets the water off you. And then they put the good blood back in you. It's a four-hour process.
And they do that because it's done with people who their kidneys aren't working right.
That's right, because you usually can't take a pee. You usually can't do really anything. And dialysis doesn't fix you, but it maintains maintains you.
Are things like kidney stones like associated with that?
At the height of my sickness, they actually told me I had kidney stones, and we laughed. We thought, really? That's what we have to worry about now? But kidney stones aren't related to that. It's just your kidneys broke down. The reason my kidneys broke down was because the pills they gave me, I was retaining water because my heart wasn't pumping out the water. So they gave me all these pills that combined with what was going on with my heart shut my kidneys down, which in turn shut my liver down.
Well, okay. So you went in because something was – you were having this bad cough.
Yeah.
Passed out, people told you that you had to go in, they start to realize that something's wrong with your heart?
That's what my GP said, and then they concentrated on that for a little bit, and then my heart doctor, my cardiologist, one day said, oh, you're hurt. They put me on a PICC line. Do you know what a PICC line is?
Yeah.
They shove it into your arm and up over your shoulder and
into your
heart.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, I've had a PICC line. I think I got the scar like right.
We can compare scars later.
Yeah, right there.
And tattoos too.
Yeah, all right. Let's get naked. What you got under there, Ken?
Wait. So how quickly after you go into the hospital from that like initial cough episode to them saying, "Oh fuck, your heart is fucked up. Let's put you on a PICC line."
That was in I got sick in October. In December, I was in the hospital. And then I got out in January, and then they put the PICC line on me. That came out in March.
What's going through your head, though?
Yeah, but wait, hold on. I'm trying to wrap my head around, like...
What the series of...
Yeah, like, because it's like you... How do you go from, like... Were they like, your kidney's fucked and your heart's fucked?
No, it started with the heart. And then they concentrated on that. I was supposed to get a heart operation. I was in the hospital. For 7 days, they kept me just lying there. And you really learn patience when you're lying in a hospital bed for seven
days.
No
doubt.
And then they came in, and the guy was blunt. He says, listen, we could operate on you and make your heart better. You'll be fantastic for a month, and then you'll die.
Whoa.
So what did they say was wrong with your heart? Or did they?
Congenital heart disease, which turned into – now, you've heard, well, you've got a fungus. You've got a virus. I had a vegetation growing on my heart that was eating all my valves.
And the
first thing I thought was vegetation. Like, what, I got Brussels sprouts? I mean, I could understand a fungus. Like, that I could understand. And then where do you pick that up? And the only spot I could think of, they kept on asking me if I'd gone to Somalia. No, but I had gone to Guatemala 3 years in a row in remote villages helping out. I must have stuck my finger in my mouth or my eye or something after touching the dirt. And this thing just worked its way to my heart, planted a little vegetable farm, and started eating away.
Is that what the doctors are like? Okay, well, that would make sense. Are they going, well, that's
they denied the Guatemala thing for the longest time, but that is the only spot I could have picked it up.
Because they're saying that it had to you had to have picked it up in a foreign environment.
Yeah, and because I was here, the Western medicine is not used to the jungle medicines down in Guatemala. If I would have gone back immediately, they probably would have caught it and been able to stop it.
Right, yeah.
Because they see it down there.
They're used to
like, oh, yeah, you got the vegetable farm.
That was kind of similar to the guest we had who came on and talked about the eye infection that he got when he was biking from Vancouver to
the title of that episode was Eye Jizz.
Right. Yeah.
And I don't think many people listened.
I saw that picture
because of that.
When I was side note, but when I was going through my phone photos this morning, I saw that photo.
Dude,
and it's gnarly.
Well, it was very similar in the way that they were like, well, when the doctors down there saw it. They were like, "Oh, well, this is this. Like your eye was exposed to dirt while you were biking, and it got in your eye and it fucked your eye up."
Yeah, they're trained for that.
Yeah, but outside of that, they're like, "What's happening to his eye?"
Mm-hmm. Have you guys ever had something like in your body that just weirds you out? Like you just don't want it to be in your body anymore?
Yeah, dude. Jeremy and I were sleeping in the same bed last night, and
not like that, not like that.
Oh,
but like.
Well, wait, why not like that?
Because that's not weird. That's normal.
No, it is weird because it was accidental.
Okay, that's another story.
The bed just kind of funnels us together in the middle of the bed. It's can't help
and
it.
And I don't know why, but my feet were at his head and his feet were at mine.
Yeah.
I think more so of like a splinter or something like that. And you're just like, I don't like this. And it just shouldn't be in me right now. And I picture like a vegetable farm growing on your head. Like the visualization like an actual
thing. I'd rather
have
eyes.
Well, Jeremy can give it to you.
So wait, but wait, is that actually like, was it, is that like a sort of like way for them to describe it to you, like the layman person who's not the doctor, so that you
maybe.
Go, hello, I guess I kind of understand? Or like, is there legitimately like some sort
of
vegetation?
Well, it's not carrots and stuff.
I know that. I know it's not food, but like, is it like a, is there some sort of like plant-based thing growing in?
That's how I understood it. And he was eating my valves. So none of the blood, none of the fluid was going into my heart to be spread evenly amongst my other organs.
You're not a vegan, are you?
Oh, no, God, man.
Okay.
it sounds like the veganism would have been trying to kill him.
Yeah. I became vegan, and then my heart started growing.
Turned into a flower. So what is there a name for this?
They called it congenital heart disease at the time, and I can't remember what it was at the end, but I mean, four doctors basically wrote me off, and they were just giving me drugs, all the drugs they could, just to ease my pain while I passed. They gave me 2 days. While I was passed out in the hospital bed, they told my girlfriend, wife, or whatever you want to call her.
Whatever.
Common
law.
She says, not on my watch. You're not letting him die. Well, it's best if we intubate him, let him die over the course of 2 days in his sleep.
Holy
that's the humane thing.
That was
to do.
The first
Holy
thing. That was one of the
fuck.
First things they said?
That's the first thing after Whoa. I got to the hospital, yeah.
That's like really
just
like
let him go. He's beyond it. His liver is shut down. His kidneys are gone. His heart's toast. Just let him go.
Whoa. Okay. So how do you get? So okay, you go in. Your heart's fucked. How does it go from let's just let this motherfucker die on the table right here to here you are 3 years later talking
to
us?
Like, she just said no. She went no. She held my hand. She apologized for what was about to happen to me, which I would not wish on my worst enemy. And they cut my neck open while you're awake. They tell you not to fight back. It's going to feel like we're killing you, and you can't help but fight back while a guy is slicing your throat open to shove a tube in it.
Whoa. Oh my God, Ken.
Yeah.
Holy shit, dude.
Okay, good old days.
I just kind of whipped up something really quick here on the internet. Endocarditis.
Yep.
Endocarditis is an inflammation in the valves of the heart. It is often caused by the growth of what you said, bacteria on one of the heart valves, leading to a mass known as vegetation. So it's a mass growing on your heart that they call vegetation.
Like a massive bacteria.
Yeah, exactly. And then symptoms are like super nonspecific and basically include a whole bunch of shit. And it people with existing diseases of the heart valves and people who have undergone heart valve replacements are at an increased risk of developing endocarditis.
Yeah, I had none of that prior to that.
Right, you just like, so they were thinking, you got this endo, and what were they saying, you have endocarditis?
They kept on bringing up Somalia, but I've never been there.
Right, okay. Man, this is
They're
so,
like, are you ever a pirate? Have you ever been into piracy in Somalia?
So how did you go from the endocarditis and all of that stuff to the kidney dialysis? Like,
well,
how did it
swap? They couldn't fix my heart without killing me, they said. So they said, well, just go home. That, and then after they did the dialysis in my neck, I was on dialysis at New Westminster Hospital for about 3 weeks before they let me out. And
is that is that a daily thing?
It's every second days. My schedule was Monday, Wednesday, and Friday of 6 hours. So an hour to get to where I was going, 4 hours in a chair, an hour to get back.
You're off work completely? Oh, yeah.
Sometimes you feel great. I think that's what Keith Richards does to make himself live so long.
Right.
Sometimes you feel great. Mm-hmm. Other times, just pull the car over about three times on your way home and puke your guts out.
So wait, that first time when they were like starting to cut your neck open and you're struggling and stuff, that so that they can do the dialysis through your neck.
I fought back with everything I had. There was blood everywhere. The pillow. My mother was there and she goes, can we change his pillow when they moved it? It was white. It was red.
Whoa.
Like just so much blood pouring out of my neck.
And this is to insert the dialysis?
So the IV treatment gets right into my blood now. So that's what my girlfriend did to me to make me live. Then they let me go to do dialysis and gave me 5 months to live. The same day I found out I had 5 months to live, my son told me I was going to be a grandfather in 6 months.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. And that's when I decided, yeah, this isn't me. This isn't how my story goes.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
And then what?
Yeah. I'm like, holy shit. So then,
well, then you spent
a
year
kicked the doctor in the chest and I jumped out the window.
I'm kind of picturing your partner at the time, like pushing the doctor aside and actually cutting your neck and doing it for you, because she seems like she was like the advocate that really made it happen.
And that's one thing I have to push. Not only do guys need to go to the hospital more often, have an advocate. You have to advocate for yourself. If you don't, you're toast. You know, I was raised to doctors know everything. They barely know everything. You know, they have
they
their
can only
specifics.
Know so much.
They have their specifics. But overall, it's like, oh, let them go. I mean, they were willing to do that. Nobody ever would have known it. Mm-hmm. Hey, I might have lived.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think the thing is that we fall victim to this like fairy tale belief that doctors know everything.
Yep.
And then we just go, oh, well, because that's your job, then we just trust that you know all the things that I would never know because I didn't go study it. But like, I mean, Christ, we just met like a huge group of kids in med school, you know, going on to become doctors. And an experience like that where you sit in a room with them and you speak with them for, you know, a short period of time, it's enough for you to realize they're not superhuman. Who the fuck, like, there's no one out there exists who knows everything about anything.
And what grades did they get in class? I want the A doctors. I don't want the C minus doctors. They end up on Maple Ridge.
Yeah, right.
That one's going to hurt later.
So do you feel resentment towards your doctors?
No, I don't. Because my sister Colleen was a wrecking ball. She moved in. She went to every level of government, every hospital. She says, "This, you got to do something."
Mm-hmm.
She, like the song says, she came in like a wrecking ball and just did everything.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the thing is like you have to be your own patient advocate, but you to also have people on your team who advocate for you.
Yeah, because you can. And I started bringing my girlfriend to every meeting I had. Just to make sure she was getting a different perspective of what the doctor was saying.
Yeah, exactly. Because you're hearing it from one side and then having that second set of ears. My mom is like the best teammate to have for that sort of stuff. Like she's
a nurse.
She's also
on the
a nurse
inside too.
Exactly. But then you know, Bridie's really great too. And then also Becca is like a nurse as well. So it's like putting together your little like team of advocates to kind of stand by you when you go through those things.
That's what the new thing that's kind of becoming more talked about now in healthcare is the collaborative approach to treatment. So like the more involvement and collaboration between nurses and nurse practitioners and doctors. And I know that there's certainly a lot of like shortfalls in the system right now, but I think that like that collaboration is what's really key to providing the best level of healthcare.
Without a doubt. And
I think that they're now acknowledging that and trying to move towards it, but it's definitely something that needs to be worked on.
Do you think that the challenge, and this is just like open question for everybody, like that the challenge resides in that doctors go through so many years of education and then they get spit out into the system and whatever they specialize in, whether it's emergency or whatever speciality you can pick out of a hat. And then, but there's still a chance that when they go and they make a diagnosis and they say that this is the treatment, that they could be wrong.
Yeah.
And that's really hard for somebody who's been like, man, I've been through 8 years of intense schooling, mm-hmm. and now I'm having these patients, a patient and maybe a friend or a family member go, hey, you know what? I don't know.
And Dr. Google.
About that. Yeah. Yeah. And having the internet at our fingertips,
yeah.
and it being such a struggle and rightfully so, for a doctor's ego to go, man, it's really hard for me to say that I think you might be right, that this person sitting across from me that has had no formal training in medicine could be right, that there's another way to do this. And that's a huge struggle for doctors to come to terms with.
Big ego hit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And understandably so, yeah. because of the immense training
but
that
then
they go through.
Also, devil's advocate too, there's sometimes moments where a doctor might know that they're right in a certain circumstance.
Absolutely.
And the person who's sitting there who's Googled it is like, no, it's this way. And you're like,
probably way more of that.
And not,
yeah.
and not one time a day either. They're probably dealing with five different families
right.
in one day.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and it's like you it makes sense on all sides of that, right? Mm. It's like the person who's dying for an answer, literally dying and looking for an answer.
Mm.
Of course they're going to react that way in being really like, really like hot to get that answer and searching for like all the different possibilities when they don't feel like they can just accept like one thing that their doctor is telling them. And then of course, you know, the doctor's, yeah. you know, getting frustrated about someone trying to be doctor or they have the family coming down on one side and the patient coming down on the other. It's
really hard balance to strike. And it's very front of mind for me and probably for the three of us right now. We're going to be speaking. I don't know when this episode's going to come out, but in November sometime we're speaking at a conference that's touching on this subject specifically, mm-hmm. of patient advocacy and the importance of advocating for yourself in your treatment. And
you
your,
have to do it. Otherwise you're toast.
Yeah, if you just take everything blindly, then you're not a helping hand in your own treatment. Yeah.
I think right before we get back to your story, Ken, this part of the conversation reminds me of this conversation that Taylor and I were having the other day with a friend of ours. It's about the contrast of different experiences of human beings in a hospital. Our friend of ours lost his mom. And when she died in the hospital, it was like 1 a.m. and they had just lost her. And moments after, while they're sitting there mourning, the janitor walks past the doorway, pushing one of those big buffing machines, just like slowly buffing the hall. And like in
probably
his world.
Probably with headphones on, like humming.
Like, but like in his world, it's such an insignificant event in the hospital, right? Yeah. Like he's in the hospital and that stuff happens all the time. But to them in that room, like that's their world has changed forever. Yeah. Right. And like, yes, he's just the janitor, but think about how often medical professionals, nurses, nurse practitioners, all the people who are involved in providing quality healthcare in the hospital, like they see things like this happen all the time.
Every day, every hour.
And it's a reminder almost to them in a sense that like this is a very human experience and families are dealing with something that's extremely emotional, but at the same time, an equal reminder to those families that like, these are people who see this stuff happen every day. And like, they're the people who we lean on to provide that sense of strength and support when we're going through these challenges too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sick Boy Podcast. We'll be right back after this word from our sponsors.
Well, it looks like we just crossed 5 million podcasts in the world, so it is with some humility that I introduce mine, Kelly Corrigan Wonders. Once a week, we share heart-to-hearts with smart, good people like Brian Stevenson, Anna Quinlan, Father Greg Boyle, talking about how we treat each other, how we treat ourselves, and how we might do both better. Kelly Corrigan Wonders is a podcast for people who like to laugh while they think and aren't afraid of feelings. Join us for Kelly Corrigan Wonders.
So going back to your story, when you get, so, you know, initially the doctors are going, you know, this guy's going to be dead in 2 days. Just let him die in peace. And then it's 5 months, and now it's 3 years later, that, and you're still here. What are the treatments that the doctors go, oh, okay, well, you said the dialysis.
Dialysis,
what happened
sure.
then when they were like, well, okay, we can start doing this to treat
this thing?
I was
going to get a new kidney. So I had five people, three that I knew, and then two other strangers step up and say, well, I'll donate a kidney to him. So I must have done something right in my lifetime mm-hmm. to have that happen. Mm-hmm. And two people turned out to be matches. One of them was my sister, Colleen. And so it was like, perfect, we're going to do this. She mm-hmm. went through all the testing. I went through all the testing. And then something started happening with my heart again. And the kidney people didn't think I was ready, even though I got the okay from my heart doctor. He says, your heart has healed itself. And I remember asking, well,
like vegetation
heart
gone?
Can't do that. Well, they think the PICC line got rid of my vegetation, and the valves just closed up by themselves. You know, at the time, we didn't know this, but that was a misdiagnosis. So we ignored the heart and just went right to the kidney and, okay, get me off of dialysis, you know, a year and a half later, and I've already lost now 70 pounds. I went from 220 pounds down to 150. Wow. Had a six-pack and everything. I was hot except for all the tubes sticking out of it. And, then we went back to the kidney people, and they went, nope. No, we're not going to give you. We don't trust your heart, doctor. And they were right. If they would have given me that kidney, I would have died anyway, and then my sister would have been left with only one kidney.
So the heart doctor thought that your heart was better,
yep.
but it wasn't.
Nope.
And then you went to the kidney people. The kidney people said, I don't know about that. They were right. Your heart was still getting fucked up by the vegetation.
Yeah, and that's when I had to get out of the hospital that was where I live and come out to Vancouver in St. Paul's. And those guys were amazing. They did everything. Angiograms. You ever had an angiogram?
No.
You ever see war movies when a guy gets shot right in the leg and they're trying to find that vein? Yeah. Like that.
Yeah.
Wait.
Yeah,
what's an angiogram? What is it?
They go through your leg with a camera up through that vein
and
up into your heart.
Oh, I've heard of that.
It doesn't hurt, but you can feel it moving around in there.
Oh, man, my inner thigh is such a sensitive area.
That's the same thing as hurting.
Everybody's cringing because every guy knows how that's going
to
feel.
Yeah. My leg just fucking went to sleep. I'm not even kidding. My leg just went to sleep.
That was the one thing I was worried about the most.
Yeah, no shit.
But that and then a couple of colonoscopies. You haven't lived until you had a couple of those.
Mm. How were the farts after?
Oh, that was incredible. The little Chinese lady beside me was outgunning everybody. Unbelievable.
I've had a colonic. They're pretty great, actually.
A colonic is way different than a colonoscopy.
A colonic is a voluntary therapeutic version of a colonoscopy.
A colonic is like, all right, we're going to take this little tube, and we're just going to very calmly just slip this tube up in just a couple inches up in here, and then put a little bit of just warm liquid. How's that feel? Oh, yeah, it feels okay, I think. It feels a little foreign. Colonoscopy is like, all right, we're going to take this this giant fucking camera, right?
The old VHS ones from the 80s.
Yeah, that's right.
Shove it sideways right up your ass.
Yeah, that's right, yes. Yeah. So CBC cameraman's coming in right now. And what was his name? Ken, the cameraman?
Steve.
Steve, the cameraman. And just shove that thing from your asshole basically to your throat. And you're half awake.
But they give you fentanyl to ease the pain.
That's right. Well, ease the pain and also kind of like loosen you up and calm you down.
Apparently my colon was very clean. The hardest thing about the colonoscopy is all that shit you got to take beforehand the night before. All the powdered milk and you got to drink this pint of crap. And then if you're...
You drink a pint of crap? What's the point of that?
Even when they say, take the flavored kind, now it just tastes like orange-flavored shit. And you have to drink this, and then if you leave within 10 feet of a bathroom, you're forget it. You're shitting your
bad
pants.
News.
Yeah, right.
I think I shit out a piece of Lego I ate when I was 3 years old.
Oh, my
everything,
God.
Everything came out.
Something just stuck to the wall of your colon.
Was your butthole just raw? Like, were you wiping
after a while, it's just like pissing from your asshole.
Yeah.
It's not even color anymore.
Yeah.
Dude,
yeah,
do you guys want to learn anything? You got to use wet wipes.
Well, actually, I've done this before, not with the thing, but I've done it with salt water. I've done like a salt water. I've done it a few times.
Right.
We do a salt water thing. You drink...
I think it's a little different.
You drink like... Well, I mean, the same kind of premise is that you just...
Shit
over and over again until you're basically shitting clear liquid out of your ass.
Taylor was in a cult that it was a really weird
I went through the whole.
The
I went through
Davidian?
Every.
What was the?
I think it was Nexium. Nexium was the thing. And then right up to the very end, I did the whole thing. I had sex with the dude, and then
Then it was really horrible.
Right up to the very end, and they were like, "Here, drink this Kool-Aid." And I was like, "You know what? Really not into fruit punch." But yeah. And that was it. And I didn't do it.
And they're like, "Wait, we're done with the salt water? I'm not fucking out of here."
Yeah.
They're like, "Also, metaphorically, you've been drinking the Kool-Aid the entire time."
Yeah, metaphorically, that's right. But literally. I would not.
So they figure out, okay, kidneys aren't the issue here. It is the heart.
Back to the heart after a year and a half on dialysis.
And just to like, and apologies to the listeners, but this there's so much here that I'm and going back and forth. They were like, yep, you got the heart vegetation, like the endocarditis or however the fuck you pronounce that. And then they're like, all right, we're gonna give you the PICC line, and that's gonna like fight that off.
That's gonna fix it.
And then they go, oh, we got it. We actually fixed it. Yeah. Your heart's like doing much better. But wait, your kidney's fucky, so we're gonna send you over here. They're gonna look at your kidney. Kidney people are like, your kidney's not that bad. I think your heart's still fucked. And then you're like, oh, fuck. And you go back, and the heart people are like, we're gonna send you to Vancouver. You come to Vancouver.
Yeah.
Do they figure out that your heart is still fucked?
Yep. They found out that it was horrible. After all the tests and everything, they had the x-rays, they had the angiogram, they mapped my whole heart. And it was the heart itself. If the heart is an engine, the engine was funny fine, just running fine. But all the tubes going into it were eaten apart. The surgeon afterwards told me it was like those trees that get eaten by caterpillars.
Yeah,
that's
right.
That's what my valves looked like. That's why none of the fluid was going, just blowing everywhere. I had this huge descended stomach from all the fluid not going where it was supposed to, but just building up in front of me.
Is the reason that you were passing out because you had low blood pressure because of the holes in your heart?
You know what? We never did find out about that after.
Yeah, I wonder.
Yeah.
And I wonder, I'm asking, I just actually, for the first time in a really long time, I was actually scared that I had a health issue the other day. And it was because I went to Brian and I sat down at one of these kiosks at like a Sobeys or a whatever with the pharmacy
grocery
section.
Store. Yeah,
I love that word kiosk.
Kiosk
at the kiosk, and you know, it takes your blood pressure and tells you your BMI and your weight and all that stuff. And I went through and Brian and I did it, and it told me that my blood pressure was at risk. And then a couple days later, I was telling that to somebody. And I was trying to recollect what the number was that it told me was like the big number,
right?
And I was like, man, I think it was 180. And our friend who we were sitting with, who's a dietitian, was like, that is so high that you might die right now, like at this table. And I was like, I'm pretty sure that was the number. And then I told my mom that a couple days later, and she was like, Taylor, that is so serious. You need to go. And I was like, fuck. Do I have crazy high blood pressure and I'm like at risk of dying right now? So I went back to the store. I did the test five times. And I just had, basically regular blood pressure. But I was sitting there thinking, like, holy fuck, like, do I have high blood pressure? Do I have to go on medication? Do I have to go see the doctor? Do they have to prescribe me stuff? Like, what the fuck is going on? And for the first time in a really long time, I was actually worried that I had a health concern, which I've always kind of gone through, especially this experience that we have talking with all these people that are sick, going, I'm not someone who gets sick. And it's surprising how
still have that. Hey?
Yeah, I do still have that, even though knowing that, I mean, we do is talk to people who have had things, and especially someone like in your case, Ken, who's going along like da 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 da. Yeah. This is my life is normal, and then
all of a sudden,
and then I'm passed out.
Yeah,
and so like, what was I guess tying coming back to your like frame of mind? What was your thought process or like your emotional state around going, hey, I was normal and now like today I'm not, and now all of a sudden I'm being plunged into this, like you're going to die.
My very first thought was, you know, I have so many clients, like I got to get this work done. I didn't even want to be in the hospital. I just got to get, I'm self-employed. Mm-hmm. And that's how I pay the bill. And they want me to stay in the hospital for 13 days?
Yeah.
I can't do that. I had a doctor say one time, okay, you're going to stay here for the weekend. I went, well, why? You're not going to be here. He goes, no, I'm going skiing, but you're going to stay here and I'll come back on Monday. And I went, well, I'll see you on Monday. He goes, nope, you're staying here. I went, no, I'm not. And I just left.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not staying for the weekend. He was pissed at me.
Was there a point where you started to think like this is thinking of it that way is sort of irrational in the way of going, my life is at risk.
I never really thought of that. I'd heard all the doctors tell me that, but deep down inside, I was like, this isn't me. Even when I was sitting in that dialysis clinic, and guys are in dialysis for 30 years, and I'm like, I could never do that. This is not a life. It, as I said earlier, it maintains you. But at that same time, I was still losing weight.
Yeah.
You walk in and you lose 10 pounds in the course of 4 hours. They suck out 10 pounds of fluid from you.
Wow. Jesus Christ. I wonder how often stubborn people die just because they're stubborn.
Well, yeah, like I'm wondering, like I'm hearing you say this and I'm going, did you just get lucky? Like, did you just get lucky or was there some sort of thing within you that just knew deep down, I know that this is not the way that I go?
That's what it was. And also, I followed exactly what every doctor told me to do for about 2 or 3 weeks. And if I didn't see any difference, then I stopped doing it and did a lot of the stuff I controlled just by diet.
Right. See, now, okay, so here's the thing is I want to be like, I want to be really cautious here because I feel like that's something that you believe in, but I don't know. I mean, I feel like it's safe to say that none of us in this room can actually say that that is true.
I would not recommend doing it that way.
Okay, great. Yeah, perfect.
It worked for me, but it probably won't work for everybody else.
Right. And that's what I mean by, like, you know how there's, like, sometimes when I, and this is nowhere near as on the scale that you're talking, but, like, I feel very in tune with my body. And I feel like the way that I relate to my sinuses, my whole respiratory tract, my lungs, and my digestive system, because of everything I've been through, and also because of like yoga and theater training and the way that I've related to like how my body works as a tool, I feel very in tune with when I am about to come down with something.
Yeah, you're and aware like
I fucking call it.
You call it all the time.
Way before it even happens.
Yeah, you do.
Right? Like the time that the last time I was admitted and was like really fucked up in the hospital, we were away. And I was saying to you guys, I feel weird. I feel really weird.
But sometimes I feel like you do that in the sense that like you're at like a roulette table and it's been red for like 27 times in a row. And then you're like, I think the next time it's going to be black.
Right? Yeah. Well, yeah, it could potentially. But there is a sense of like, I feel like I know. Yeah. I can't really put my finger on what that is or where that really comes from. I can assume, I can think, you know, it might come from this or that or whatever, but I don't really know. And so like when I hear someone like yourself who's making these like, that's a fucking drastic decision.
It is.
To basically go, no, you're staying here for the weekend, and you go, nah, I know, I'm going to go do this thing. Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it to anyone.
I wouldn't recommend it either.
But it is pretty fucking fascinating and interesting to know that
I had to get away from that food.
Yeah. Yo.
It takes a special talent to turn something that looks like sweet and sour pork into something that tastes like shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Hospital food is bananas to me. And that's also something that I feel like we need to talk to an American about, because in those like privatized hospitals in the States, the food is like 5-star Michelin, like,
well, I mean, you're paying for it.
Yeah.
Hospital cafeterias have good food, but the stuff they serve the patients is something totally different. Garbage.
That's the thing, though, dude. You could be in Canada and get free healthcare and order Uber Eats every day for cheaper.
You can. There you go. Yeah, right. Again.
Not in Vancouver. we don't have Uber here yet.
No, but you have Uber Eats. Uber Eats. They got it. They do.
Same with Halifax. We don't have Uber, but we have Uber Eats.
Okay.
Which I'm like, how the fuck does that work?
Come on. come on, guys. okay, crazy. So you basically defy your medical team. But how do you come out on the other end? Like where did this all start to, because I'm looking at you now. You look I've gained
50 pounds back.
Okay, but you're nowhere close to where you were.
No, I'm 20 pounds less still.
Okay, yeah, sweet. So you look great.
Thank you, sir.
You look good. You seem healthy.
I hope I am. I just had my 1-year checkup at the beginning of this month.
So it's been one year
since my heart operation. It's been 3 years since I actually got sick.
Okay, so you ended up going for operation. What was the operation itself?
The operation itself was this doctor at St. Paul's, Dr. Bashir, I'm going to give a shout out to him. He took pity on me. He found my file by accident. 4 other doctors had refused to operate on me. The Hippocratic Oath states do no harm. So we're not going to open them up and kill them. We're going to do no harm. But in doing no harm, they were killing me.
Yeah, right. So this guy, get that.
Yeah, this guy, he sent a note out to everybody. How dare you become a doctor and not at least try to help this guy? I found they were trying to – they didn't want a death on their resume. And you right. know, I yeah, was yeah. I
like a lawyer that doesn't want to take a losing case.
Yeah, my mindset was already, I'm going to die. So let's try whatever we can to make it happen that I don't. I was willing. And this guy took a chance that 30% chance you're probably maybe come out of this, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't expect to wake up, but especially when they wheeled me into the wrong
30% room. 30% chance that you would be okay.
That
so
I
a 70% chance
that I was going to die. Wow. I had to sign off on everything. I mean, I was okay with that, right? It's like... It's like Hail Mary.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's there's 10 seconds left, and it's fourth and two.
Yeah.
And you want the left winger to hit the touchdown on the scorepost. So
several different sports rolled into that one, Jer, but I know you're doing your best.
You know?
Okay,
was it a home run or not?
Yes, it was. I caught the ball, got the cheerleader. I'm a happy guy.
But wait. You said something there. You said something there that it was kind of shocking. You were like, it didn't start off very well when they wheeled me into the wrong room.
Yeah, so I'm signed up. They finally got my girlfriend out of the room. I'm there by myself, and the orderly comes to get me. The surgeon had signed my neck with his initials on the side of the neck. And they're wheeling me down the room, and they come to the room, and I'm looking at sunlight for what I think might be my last time ever. And they wheel me in this room, and the nurse goes, I'm your doctor, and the anesthesiologist says, I'm this guy. And I'm thinking, well, I haven't met any of these people. I've already met the team. And they go, don't worry, Mr. Miller. You'll be perfectly fine in our hands. I went, yeah, I'm not Mr. Miller.
And then they inject you.
And then they, you go to sleep. I'm lying on a gurney naked. And so they took my neck, and they went, oh, you don't belong to this room. So... Cover me back up out in the hallway, and I went, you know what? Only me. But the whole thing was just a travesty. The whole thing was mistakes after mistakes.
Do you know what Mr. Miller was in to get?
I don't know. I think it was for a leg amputation. I'm not sure.
Oh, man. That'd be so fucked up if they took your leg. Yeah.
He was actually the first penis transplant.
Yeah. And it was a double penis transplant to replace his nipples. So he was the first person to get dick nipples in Canada.
You just wake up with dick nipples?
Yeah. And you're like,
but my heart still feels damaged. And they're like,
that would be
shit.
The opposite way when you're cold.
Holy shit. Like, what? How does this happen? How does this
It became a running joke. We used to make a joke before we went to the hospital or doctors or whatever. What can go wrong? What could possibly go wrong now? It became like the tagline of, and something would always happen.
Anything, Murphy's Law.
This might be a bit of a silly question, but I feel like, you know, we keep referring to the States. I feel like if this was happening in the U.S., you would just inherently be someone who would be suing the fucking pants off of everyone and everything throughout this entire journey.
That's been brought up a few times. A couple of lawyers have actually said, you know, you probably have a case.
I mean, you'd probably have to sue them in the States, though, because you'd need that money to pay for the work.
$600,000, I asked. Right. Am I the $6 million man yet? And they went, no, but you get $600,000.
That's how much the whole
operation
thing would have cost. Yeah, right. Yeah.
And I was getting drugs for free. When you're on dialysis, a lot of stuff you get for free. A lot of the pills you get. It's amazing.
Did you have to go out of pocket for anything?
Not really. My girlfriend works in the lumber industry, so she's got great medical benefits.
Mm-hmm. You said in your application that you did, though, that you, like, bought some shit? Like, having to pay for the shit I bought?
I tried everything. There was dialysis stuff. I even tried acupuncture. I mean, when you're checking out, just go for it. I tried acupuncture. I tried everything.
When you mean checking out, you mean dead.
They told me I was going to be dead in 5 months. Yeah. I mean, so there's no point in buying gifts for Christmas. You know, I'm not going to be here.
Yeah.
And
so it saved you money in the long run.
It did not, because for the 5 months, I thought, you know what? I need a new barbecue. Oh, my TV's kind of small. I need a 60-inch.
Dude,
that, you know, the sound's kind of off. I need a new receiver. I don't need to pay for it. Yeah. I need this stuff. Just leave it for my kids when I die.
And I mean, like, if you structure it right, they don't have to pay for it when you die.
Yeah,
you just have to make sure that you structure it right.
So the surgeon goes in and takes care of the heart issue. They get you into the right room.
Yep.
Did the surgery go off without a hitch?
Apparently, I was out for about 23 hours from what I'm told.
Whoa, that's a long time.
My son's a videographer, and I wanted to document what was happening. So I had him, I wanted him to film the operation. But they wouldn't let him in.
That would have been fucking great. Man, if my dad asked me to come in and film his heart surgery, I would be like, Dad...
Well, I was keeping notes of everything that happened, because I thought maybe once I'm dead, someone can learn from everybody else's mistakes. You know, don't do what I did. Yeah. But now I'm a shining example of being a rebel, so I don't get it.
Yeah,
did,
right.
Okay, but wait, did the movie get made?
Not yet, but I'm in the process of writing a book.
Oh,
really?
Sweet. Oh, sweet. Yeah. And what, like, how far along that process are you?
Well, I looked up how many words a normal book have. It's between 60 and 100. Yeah. 1,000 words.
Oh,
I'm at about 35,000.
That was like 60. Yeah, 60 words. That's a lot of words.
Yeah, that's a lot of words. Oh,
60,000.
It could be a novella.
Yeah, there you go. That's what I'm thinking, because I don't want to write it now.
What's the like ultimate premise behind the book?
Keep a good sense of humor, positive attitude, and be your own advocate.
Yeah, we don't subscribe
to
that.
Fake news.
Yeah.
That's a fucking crazy story, though. I got to say, like, from passed out on the office floor to a year ago, how long was that?
2 years.
2 years. Just like 2 years of absolute, just absolute insanity.
Yeah.
How did it take a toll on you? Like, how have you changed from that? How did it take a toll on you mentally or physically?
Mentally, my priorities have shifted. What used to be important is not that important. Now I watch other people get all upset about the smallest of things. I just think,
like, when they don't give you rice in your red curry that you ordered from Uber Eats.
Why are you looking at him?
He's looking at us because it was him.
Jer had a little bit of a tantrum last night.
Yeah, I had a little bit of a temper tantrum.
I'm the only one out of the three of us who doesn't freak out about food things. So
we've all got our things.
In the big scheme of things, first world problems, right?
That's right.
Absolutely.
Very much so.
And what about physically? How did it take a toll on you physically?
I look after myself more now.
Yeah.
In what
ways?
Lots of walking. Exercising. I mean, I was just a typical male before. I exercised a bit, maybe some golfing. That was about it. My whole focus was on work. Now work is still important. I got to please my clients, make sure they're happy. But in the big scheme of things, life and family is important.
Yeah,
absolutely.
When you talk about like the typical male thing before, one of the other things that we find that usually comes up with men, and we touched on this a little bit at the beginning, but is that idea of like vulnerability, and I'm curious to know if you've kind of come in touch with that side of who you are a little bit more, and have been a little bit more open about that.
Yeah, I am. I was very much a solo guy, very independent. I'm not so much anymore. I do reach out for help now. A lot of people banded together. I mean, I had people praying for me, and I'm not a big prayer kind of guy, but I know a lot of people prayed for me from here all the way down to Guatemala. So that must have done something. Some good vibes were out there floating around somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a pretty tough thing that, you know, again, touching on what you just said, the typical guy, like it's really tough to change what the typical guy is, in the way that it would be really great if 5, 10, 15, however long it takes, that the typical guy is more in tune, the guy who is fine with talking about the fact that he's got something going on. And I know, and I'm speaking from that in the place that I'm going, I know personally that that's really hard, because subconsciously I find myself being that current typical guy going, yeah, I don't need to go to the doctor. Okay, I don't have a doctor. I feel fine, so I think I'm fine. I think I know my body's working, and whatever. Oh, there's this little issue. No, I don't need to, whatever. I don't need to really talk about it too much. That happens to me too. And we're in this. We do this, and I still feel that way. So it's a hard ship to turn around. But
yeah, so you should be on the front line of leading that charge.
Yeah, but also, Taylor, it's like, think about where you would be if we hadn't been doing this.
Right. Oh, absolutely. You know, absolutely. Like, absolutely. It started to change that. And I'm saying that from like it's quite a minor thing. The biggest thing in my personal life is that I need a fucking family doctor, but you know, that's a healthcare system woe, not necessarily my
That is a big woe right now. There is a lack of doctors that I'm trying to lead the charge of getting these doctors in. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've talked to the Division of Family Practices, I've talked to the College of Physicians, and it's the public that says we need doctors, but the public's not doing that right.
Ken, I got a question that we tend to ask a lot of our guests. What would you say is the biggest thing that your experience with all of this, what would you say is the biggest thing that it's taken away from you?
Taken away from me? It's taken away my, what's it taken away from me? My time that I spend away from the home, I guess. That's what it's taken away from me. I spend a lot more time at home now.
Okay. All right.
I'm not antisocial by far, but it's just I enjoy the house more. I enjoy just relaxing.
And what would you say is the biggest thing that it's given you?
Insight into how many people that you think don't make mistakes can make mistakes.
Yeah, that's like, I mean, that's come up a couple times in this conversation. I do really think it's so vitally important that people realize that.
The advocacy thing has been a huge
through line. And just realize that doctors are people and people make mistakes.
Yep.
And you should never put all of your trust and all of your weight and all of your, you know, all of your chips into that one person's hands because... They're not superhuman.
And that's not a knock on doctors.
No, that's going,
hey,
that's recognizing that they're fucking human.
Yeah, and being helpful for them. Yeah.
I took my GP out for a beer after I thought I was going to be a lot better. I took him out for a beer and I said, you know, you're the first one to call the heart. You know, and then it went on to kidneys and then went to liver.
Yeah.
I said, you were the first one. And I said, what made you think that? I walked in with a cough and he said, experience. You know, you can look up Google, you can do machines. He said, but when you walked in, you could just see the color of your skin, the way your eyes were dilated, and the cough, that had to do with your heart, endocarditis. And he was right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a year and a half later, did everybody go, oh, maybe he was right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think the one thing I would challenge, and I don't know if you meant it this way, Jared, but like when you say like never put all of your trust into one person, it's like I feel like more of an optimistic way, like put all of your trust into a person. Like you can put all of your trust into a doctor, but just know with that caveat that they could make mistakes and that's a reality of life.
Do your homework.
Yeah. It's like when you trust, because
don't trust someone blindly.
I'm saying trust them, but don't expect them to be the only answer.
Don't expect
your trust to be the thing that should get you to the other side, because people make mistakes. It's not like a don't trust your doctors. Fuck, trust your doctors. They're the ones who know what they're talking about, but also understand that they're human.
I think that clarifies it.
Speaking to that, my heart doctor said, well, you're better. Go away. We'll see you in a year. I would have been dead in a year if I had listened to him.
Yeah.
If I had put a total trust into him, I'd be dead.
Yeah. Man, what a wild story.
Yeah.
Ken, you kicked it off. You kicked it off well for our very first recording while we've been here in Vancouver.
Is this still the Q4 tour?
Yeah, this is, well, technically it is.
And I'm
Q4.
The bridesmaid. I'm only here because you guys had a cancellation.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we had like last minute cancellation and we were able to squeeze you in. I'm so glad we did. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to come out from Maple Ridge and come hang out with
us. Not a problem. Thank you, and keep up the good work.
Yeah,
thank you.
The public needs to know and the public needs to rally behind advocating.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, I totally agree.
Great topic to hit on today. I loved it.
And thank you all so much for tuning in. We really hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back next week with another episode from this little Q4 tour out in Vancouver. And in the meantime, we say it every week, and we mean it every week. Go on over to Apple Podcasts and leave a rating and a review. It's just one of those things that helps us stay on the Apple iTunes charts, Apple Podcast charts, and it's like kind of like the Billboard charts of podcasting. It's a great place for people to discover conversations just like this one. So I've actually heard from a lot of people who've said they've found the podcast by going to Apple Podcasts and being like, I just found out that I got diagnosed with like Huntington's disease and I don't know what to do. And like they type in disease or like certain keywords and then our show pops up.
Mm-hmm.
The fucking,
and it's everybody who leaves reviews and all that shit that allows us to be the thing that they get to.
Especially if you like SEO, like search engine optimize your reviews for us. So like if you could say like great work on the disease illness show.
Lost me.
Yeah. Thanks for the sickness talk.
Yeah.
But if you also, if you want to support us in other ways, like financially, you can also do that as well.
Yeah, you can go to patreon.com/sickboy. And like, you know, we love everyone. Everyone who listens to the show.
Everyone.
We love.
Yeah, like deeply.
There's just this little cutoff where there's like I don't want to say elite. I want to use the word elite? I don't know.
No, I don't think you do at all.
Or
supreme.
Superior or something. Supreme. Yeah.
No.
There's some type of S word that might go to some. I mean, if you do donate to us, then maybe you're in that category.
No, no, no. We love everyone equally.
Right, but I mean, like, but then there's this, that one group.
Upper echelon, if you will.
Well, guys, right.
No, no, I know.
I mean, there's just, like, there's just a little line.
No, we
it's
love
like,
all
and
of you.
Like, everybody, there's people above the line, and there's people below the line, but no, everyone's equal. Just some people are above, and some people are below.
Who's above? Who's above the line?
This, I mean, sounds, who, this sounds like what racists say to, like,
people who donate.
Justify their racism. You guys sound horrible right now. Go to patreon.com/sickboy if you want
to support. If you want to be above the line.
Oh, God, you fuckers. If you want to support. But we love each and every one of you. And, even and the people who don't can't afford to give us a dollar a month.
Although you're below the line, we still love you.
Cool.
Speaking of other other people who support us, big thanks to Larry Gifford for providing this space for us that we're recording in today.
Chorus might, Entertainment.
Chorus Entertainment.
You might remember Larry.
Larry was on the podcast. He talked about his Parkinson's in this very studio with us. And Larry actually has his own podcast, and it's called When Life Gives You Parkinson's. So if you're done listening to this and you're all caught up on Sick Boy, definitely go check out Larry's podcast, When Life Gives You Parkinson's.
I feel like there needs to be an ending to that title. You know, like, When Life Gives You Parkinson's, shake the lemonade all over your face.
Right, yeah, yeah, get real sticky. Yeah.
Or something like that. Larry, hit me up. Well, we can talk. We'll brainstorm.
So, yeah, and a big thanks to Donovan, the CPAP Morgan, for the sound design on this show. Man, it's really weird that I sound like I'm a merman right now, and I'm under the water, just swimming in the ocean, having the greatest time. Blop, 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 blop.
I think Donovan does the sound, though. The sound effect?
Yeah, he did the underwater sound effects, but, like, I still need to make the bubbles.
Oh, right, okay.
Wow, I didn't know that's what a merman sounded like. I feel weird.
Merman.
And a big thanks to Take Part. They do the theme music. Take Part in this.bandcamp.com. Did I hit it?
Yeah, yep,
sweet.
You did.
All right, thank you so much. We love all you, and that is it for this week.
I'm Brian.
I'm Taylor.
I'm Jeremy.
I'm Ken.
And this is Sick Boy.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.